Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, contributing editor and film critic for Las Vegas Weekly. And joining me this week is Jay Bosworth, owner of Maximum Comics over at Tropicana and 215. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Josh.
So the reason Jay is here is, of course, because the big movie, pretty much the only movie that we care about this week, is Watchmen, which is based on a classic graphic novel by Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons. And I would have loved to say that I loved this movie, I think, because I'm a huge comics fan, and I love Alan Moore, and I love Watchmen, the comic, and I would have really liked to see a great movie based on this. And I don't think that this is a great movie. Zack Snyder, who directed 300, which I was not at all a fan of, but which a lot of people really liked, he's the director behind this one as well. And he brings some of the same sort of stylized feel to it, I think. It does. It's not a green screen thing like 300, but it definitely has some of that slow-mo action, or the slow-mo followed by the fast motion, and a lot of extra gory elements, I think, to it. And it very slavishly follows the storyline of the comic, and a lot of the visuals follow the way that the panels look in the comic. They sort of recreate that look, but it doesn't capture the soul of the story, I don't think.
Yeah, it's... I was really excited that Watchmen was coming out. I think we were all really looking forward to this movie. The big question was, would Zack Snyder adhere so close to the graphic novel? Would he get the spirit, or would it be lost in the details? And I think you're right. I think there was amazing things packed into this. If you're a fan of Watchmen and you've read it and you know the minutia, there are things you'll be happy about. You know, little things that are cool. But by and large, I think he lost the substance to style. He just went a little bonkers with the gore and the blood and the... Yeah.
There are a lot of moments, I think. It seems like every moment in the comic that is violent, or there's some sort of action, that gets expanded and amplified. And I don't think that's really in the spirit of what the comic is about. Which is, and for those of you who haven't read it, I kind of glossed over the summary. And I think that's another thing, that a lot of the promotion for this movie has been, wow, cool stuff. And a lot of people may not know even what it's about. And this takes place in a sort of alternate reality, 1985. Richard Nixon is still president, and the Cold War is still going on. It's actually sort of on the brink of nuclear warfare. And the heroes, the costumed adventurers, or whatever they want to call them in the movie, who've been around since about the 1940s, have been outlawed, and most of them have been retired, although Rorschach, who is, I don't know if you would call him the main character. I don't know who is really, there's not really a main character to this.
He's probably the most iconic, the one that people are going to come out loving.
Right. And he's still soldiering forward. And another former hero, the comedian, gets murdered at the beginning of this movie. And Rorschach, you know, sort of takes it upon himself to investigate what's going on, and things blossom from there. So it's a very dense story. Within the comic and in the movie as well, but it's almost like Zack Snyder is sort of going through a checklist, I think, trying to cram in as many of the elements as possible from the comic without really consideration to what works best as a movie, or what's going to make this flow for a movie audience rather than a comic book audience.
You almost wonder if it wasn't like the holy grail of movie making for him. He wanted it so bad, because he's such a big fanboy, that he wasn't able to approach it objectively, obviously. And it is slavish in its devotion to the graphic novel. And if you've read it, again, that can be a really cool thing.
Right.
But as a movie, it's definitely not a three-act structure.
No.
If you're going into it and there's so many movies out there that just follow that, you know, set up, here's, you know, these are the characters, here's the plot, let's go. And this really does not do that. It takes its time and it meanders, that some people are going to be lost by that. I think a lot of the general public is going to be lost by it, where fanboys will be having their dog-eared copy going page by page, oh, that's in there, that's in there. I don't know that the general audience is going to really flip for it.
Right, and that's one thing that I wonder about. Obviously, you and I are both comics fans. We've both read the source material more than once. But there were definitely times in the movie where things were happening, and I was thinking, I know what this is about and how this connects to everything else in the story. But if you haven't read the source material, you might wonder, what is the point of this? Why is this being included? And there's the answer to that is because it was there and they had to throw it in.
And they had to put it in. It doesn't make sense. I don't get what it is, but the gasping in the audience tells me, oh, that must be something important, significant. Well, that's okay, but if you're the general public watching this movie, that's not what you want. You want a cohesive story.
And right.
They pack a lot of emotion into it. There's a lot of layers to these characters in the comic book that sort of gets glossed over so they can pick out the most basic. Let's see, Dr. Manhattan is sort of aloof and cold, so we're just going to play him that way. When there's more to Dr. Manhattan than just that.
Right.
They sort of pick the character-defining aspect of it and really drove that home for each character. Whether that was correct or not, they lost a lot of who these characters are. Particularly Night Owl. I thought he got lost
in the shuffle. I think actually Night Owl, I mean, you're right, they lose a lot of depth to all of the characters and to the story in general. I think that's really the primary problem with this movie is that it doesn't have depth. And if you watch a certain kind of superhero movie, you watch like Iron Man or something, which I thoroughly enjoyed, and complaining that doesn't have a lot of depth is sort of beside the point in a lot of ways, I think. But here, the whole point of the story, of the comic, is depth, is analysis, and that's really what they lose. But going back to Night Owl, I thought of all the characters, he was the one who seemed the most real.
He's the most identifiable, I think, for sure. If you read the comic, his relationship with Hollis Mason, Night Owl, the first Night Owl for the 40s generation, that was sort of the heart for me. And everyone gets something different each time. But for me, the heart of that was their relationship and their meanings. They touch on a little bit, but even the fate of Hollis Mason and some of the things.
Yeah, that's left out.
It's left out. So it's sort of, to me, it neutered Night Owl's whole angle. But honestly, I was surprised by Silk Spectre. Everything I had read and anticipated before, I was not expecting much out of Malin Ackerman. And she's pretty.
Yeah.
Her bangs look great.
She's not much of an actress. And I've seen her in a few other things. She was in the Heartbreak Kid with Ben Stiller.
Yeah, she was.
and I don't consider her exactly a great actress either. And for me, the emotional core of the story is that character.
Yep.
And she has so many strong connections to Night Owl and to Dr. Manhattan. And she's the person who seems probably the most grounded in reality. And that's what's really lost in that performance. Yep. I think it's a very flat, very superficial performance from Malin Ackerman. And that loses the connection. It's hard to connect to these people as people, which even in a very broad, grand story like this, I think you need to have that, and that doesn't show up. You can understand Bruce Wayne, you can understand Tony Stark, even though they're broadly characterized, but I didn't really feel that way about the characters in the movie. Again, it's a different story in the comic, I think.
It's very different. In Silk Spectre, again, with her, she has a direction and a purpose in the book. In the movie, she almost comes off as a floozy. I don't, you know, old school term there. But you know, her loyalties lie throughout the movie. And the book, it changes. But in this, I don't get the emphasis of why is she doing this? Why is she even superheroing in the first place?
Right.
They really sort of lose that. The relationship between her and her mother, the first Silk Spectre, was one of the coolest things about the graphic novel.
Right.
And she did a great job in the movie. I thought that her character was fully fleshed out. First,
Carla Gugino?
Carla Gugino. She did a great job. But Silk Spectre, the daughter, I don't really see motivation.
No. Her. And Carla Gugino, I think, is a really great actress. And the first Silk Spectre is a very small part in this movie, and I was thinking it would have been so much better if they had put her in the young. I guess maybe she's too old. She's not old enough to play the old age version of the Silk Spectre, and you got to get that awful old age makeup, which never looks good.
And of which there's lots in this movie. There are a lot of old age makeup close-ups. It's like, really? Your $100 million budget?
Right.
Okay, I guess I know where it went to, and it wasn't makeup.
No. And the other awful makeup moment in this movie is the Richard Nixon impersonator. and Nixon being president is an important part of the story. It's very important. And so it's good that they didn't change that. But I think, again, this goes to making it a movie and not a comic. In the comic, you can look at a drawing of an older Richard Nixon and suspend your disbelief because everything is a drawing.
Yeah.
But here, looking at the guy in the silly Nixon makeup with the giant nose and the bad Nixon impression. It just takes you out of it. It's silly. It would have worked better, I think, if they had left Nixon off screen or only in shadows or something to temper that. Or maybe they could get Frank Langella from Frost Nixon or something like that.
We're used to crossovers. We like
that. Yeah, absolutely. It's comics. You can have tons of crossovers.
There were a few other cameos that I felt were a little wacky. No spoiler alerts, I guess, but you know, the Pat Buchanan.
Right,
These, the Lee Iacocca. And these were added to the movie. Those were specifically movie additives. And they were sort of, other than it just took me out of what I was watching rather than placing me in that era.
Right, right. It emphasizes to you, I mean, those are real people who then are being portrayed, but not by themselves. And it does sort of shatter you want to create a world that you can believe in, even though it's fantastical within its own terms. And that does, I think that does shatter it. So, I don't know, we're really piling on this movie.
Yes.
And I want to say that there are some positive aspects to it. And again, I really dislike 300. And I definitely think this was better than 300. I think he had a better sense of balance here, even though it's still off. And the one thing I really liked was the very beginning of the movie, where during the opening credits, where they do a sequence. It's sort of like a montage. It's not exactly still images, but it's almost just like posed shots of different characters. And it's the one way, because there's so much backstory in the comic that gets conveyed through text pieces and through flashbacks and just things that you can't cram in unless you want to make a 12-hour movie, which seemingly he might have liked to do, but you can't do. So to convey a certain sense of some of these moments of the backstory of the minor characters, I think it does a good job of giving you a sense of the world without having to throw a bunch of exposition at you or a bunch of extra scenes. And it was understated, which is not a word that I was used to describe anything else in the movie.
No.
So I liked that part. I liked Patrick Wilson's performance as Night Owl.
Yeah, really good.
And Jackie Earle Haley, who plays Rorschach, I think it's really would be really hard for anybody to make that character believable because of the very stylized dialogue that he has. And he's working virtually the whole time with a mask that covers his entire face, very gruff, so almost sounded to me like the Christian Bale Batman voice.
Very much. He was doing all his acting through his voice.
Right.
Because you couldn't, even his body language, he's such a small person in the comic and the movie.
Right.
That not a lot of that comes across. Although the ferocity he displays while he's, when he's been unmasked and at different points in the movie, I thought that came across really well.
Yeah.
When the mask is off and you see that. The Rorschach's just an interesting character in general. He lives his days on the streets and he lives his nights on the streets.
Right.
So he doesn't have that separation that Bruce Wayne has of living in high society, you know, amongst those criminals versus the criminals on the street. Rorschach just marinates in filth all the time. So there's really no separation.
Right.
And I think that he captured that quite well, despite the dialogue. And God bless Alan Moore. It's a great, you know, but whenever I read Watchmen, some of Rorschach, he's my least favorite character. Because some of the things that he does and says, especially, I didn't really find too believable. But Jackie Earle Haley does a great job in the movie.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing where you can read some of that dialogue on the page, and it has a Pulp Fiction-y quality to it that you buy into. Because a lot of what Watchmen is, the comic is doing, is making connections with other comics and with literature and a tradition of somewhat hokey stories.
Mm-hmm.
But you speak that dialogue in a movie and it doesn't have the same quality to it. And I think that's another example of where something that's great about the comic doesn't necessarily mean that it's great in a movie.
Yeah.
And a great movie of this comic might have made more changes, might have thought about how do we tell this story as a movie rather than as a graphic novel? So I think that's kind of the bottom line for me, that it's a recreation, but it doesn't stand on its own. And I would love, and I'm sure all the comics fans who are out there are going to be going at midnight on Thursday to see this movie are going to love it simply because it exists.
It's an event. It's a spectacle.
Right.
The only way I can think of to describe this movie is a buffet. And I know maybe that's wussing out a little bit, but a buffet. You go to a buffet, you're not going to like everything on the buffet. You're going to leave full. You just may not be satisfied when you leave.
Right.
You may have eaten a lot of junk along the way with a few bits of something good.
Yeah.
But you will be full when you leave.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sure. And it's long. That's the other thing. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes. It packs a lot. But I gave this movie 2.5 stars out of 5 in my review. I think mediocre, but not a complete failure. I don't know if you want to quantify your opinion.
Well, I give it 3 M's for maximum comics out of 5.
All how right. About that? That's no, good.
It was good. It just, the violence, I can't say enough how shocking.
Right, yeah, the violence was. Is definitely very overdone. And I love violent movies when they're called for. And here it's definitely not within the spirit of the movie. So I think pretty much everyone is going to be wanting to see this movie this weekend. This is really dominated. But I do want to mention there's one other thing opening this week on a small scale over at the Brennan Theaters at the Palms, which is part of the CineVegas art house series that they're starting up again that used to be over at Galaxy. And before that was over at the Tropicana Cinema. It's a very cool thing that the CineVegas Festival does year-round. And the first movie that they're booking is Two Lovers with Joaquin Phoenix and Gwyneth Paltrow, directed by James Gray, who made We Own the Night and The Yards, and a bunch of sort of crime thriller movies with a lot of family dynamic going on. And this movie, it seemed like maybe he was making all those crime movies and really he wanted to be doing the family thing. So finally he just jettisoned the whole crime angle. And this is really about Joaquin Phoenix is this guy who's been dumped by his fiance. He's very suicidal at the beginning of the movie. He's depressed and he is torn between Gwyneth Paltrow as this sort of blonde goddess neighbor of his who's completely screwed up and she's on drugs and she's having an affair with a married man. And Vanessa Shaw plays the daughter of his father's business partner and she's the sensible, down-to-earth, parent-approved choice and also very, very pretty and alluring as well. And so it's about him being torn between the two lovers, as the title implies. And some of it is a little melodramatic, is a little overwrought, and a little awkward, but I think it's got a lot of good performances in it. Joaquin Phoenix plays the confused, awkward guy very well. And Gwyneth Paltrow, who's known far more for being famous these days than she is for being an actress, actually does quite a good job as a vulnerable character, someone who is messed up and doesn't know what to do with her life. And so I think if you're not going to see Watchmen this weekend, and somebody is not going to see Watchmen this weekend, somebody is like, screw blockbusters, screw superheroes, it's worth going over to Brendan and checking out Two Lovers. And, of course, a few other things that are in theaters now. Benjamin Button and Slumdog Millionaire are both still out, which got a lot of attention at the Oscars. I think both of those are worth seeing. And Coraline, another movie with comic book connections, which was really good. And then coming up on DVD on Tuesday, a ton of stuff is actually coming out, which is cool. There's been nothing the past few weeks, nothing of note, I think. But two movies that I definitely want to recommend out on DVD this week. One is Rachel Getting Married, directed by Jonathan Demme, with Anne Hathaway, who was nominated for an Oscar for this role. And a really good sort of low-key family drama with a lot of warm comedic elements to it. It's the kind of movie that, if you describe the plot, it sounds very cliched about this screwed-up woman who's leaving drug rehab for a day to attend her sister's wedding and all the family dynamic. Could be sort of a Lifetime movie, but it's incredibly well acted, shot with this sort of almost home video, cinema verite type style. And really at the end of this movie, you feel like you've spent 2 hours with these people in a very real way. So that was one of my favorite movies of 2008. And another one of my favorite movies of last year was Mike Leigh's Happy Go Lucky, with Sally Hawkins, who was not nominated for an Oscar, although should have been, I think, was nominated for a Golden Globe, but gives an excellent performance as this eternally optimistic woman. And a lot of people found this movie annoying in its optimism, or not necessarily the movie's optimism, but the character's sort of eternal sunniness. But I thought it was actually a really interesting examination of being happy and what it takes to have a positive outlook about everything that goes on in your life and in the world and always see the bright side of things and how difficult that can really be, but how beneficial it is for people around you. And it's an excellent performance. So both of those, I think, are worth renting. And another movie that was big at the Oscars, Sean Penn won Best Actor for, is Milk, which, Jay, I know you've seen and you liked a lot.
Loved Milk. Yeah. Great movie. I'm a little biased, obviously. but a great movie and an important movie.
Yes.
And he really, I don't know if you were familiar with Harvey Milk before at all. He was always very outspoken and very style. You knew Harvey Milk when you heard his voice, and Sean Penn just really fell into that role. Better than I felt any of the other nominees for Best Actor. They all did really good. You know, Wrestler was great.
Yeah.
But I just thought Milk was just awesome. And I think any other year it would have been, I think Slumdog was sort of the heartfelt choice this year. Right, it had Milk a narrative the cerebral to it. Yeah. Choice, so.
Yeah, I agree with you that Sean Penn did an excellent job in this movie. Sentimentally, I think I would have preferred to see Mickey Rourke win, and who also did a great job in The Wrestler. I think overall Milk, while it tells an important story, and Harvey Milk is an important figure and worthwhile for people to know about, I think it was a little too biopic formula for me. It followed the beats of a lot of similar movies. Despite the fact that these movies are about real people whose lives are very different, they sort of streamline them into a certain kind of narrative, and I felt like they did that here. There's a documentary that I actually have not seen called The Times of Harvey Milk that came out in the 80s that's supposed to be really good. And a lot of times with stories like this, I feel like if you want to know about this person who did some amazing things in their life, it might be better to go back to a source like that. But it is a good, I think in the range of biopics, it does what it does pretty well. And Sean Penn's performance is definitely good. So I think all of those movies worth renting on DVD if you're going to the video store this week, all coming up on Tuesday are worth renting. And I'll quickly also recommend there's a million things going on, but here I also recommend Let the Right One In, which is a Swedish vampire movie that actually played here in theaters for a little bit. And
Paris Hilton.
Hilton.
Was she in that one?
No.
No, Paris what was that Hilton. Awful vampire movie that she was in?
Was she in a vampire movie?
Just recently, a really terrible one. I was afraid that was it. That's no, why when you got excited, I was like, oh, Josh Bell.
No, I'm not recommending any movies starring okay, Paris Hilton. No, it's a movie from Sweden.
Okay.
About a 12-ish-year-old girl vampire and the friendship she has with another, like a 12-year-old boy who's not a vampire. And it's a very different take on the vampire legend and an interesting movie about childhood and growing up. And it's being remade, of course, into American movie directed by the dude who made Cloverfield. Oh. So
see the Swedish version.
So see the Swedish version. Yeah. Rent that on DVD. And if you're a comics fan, check out Watchmen, but be wary. That would be my advice. So Jay Bosworth of Maximum Comics, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
And for Las Vegas Weekly, I'm Josh Bell.
Josh Bell hates everything
except me.